Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. We're here just this week for 1 hour, and this is ATIA week, and we're going to be bringing on our panel of experts to talk with all of you all about some interesting things. So before we do that, let's go ahead and listen to our Access Watch review and also a little bit of information from NASA. That's right, NASA has a new book available, which you might be able to receive from your regional talking book library or other blindness organizations. Here, take a listen to this, and then we'll follow it up with Jamie Paul's Access Watch review.
Touch the invisible sky, exploring the cosmos in Braille. January 15, 2008. Images from NASA telescopes are jewels of the space program, marvelous to behold. But how do you behold them when you can't see? The answer lies between the covers of a new NASA-funded book written in Braille, Touch the Invisible Sky. In an inspiring foreword to the volume, blind mountain climber Eric Waltenmeyer writes, "Sight is only one of many tools with which to experience the marvels of the world." Touch the Invisible Sky uses Braille, large type print, and tactile diagrams of celestial images observed by space telescopes Hubble, Chandra, and Spitzer to reveal the cosmos to the blind and the seeing impaired. Many of the pictures in the book show the cosmos at wavelengths that no human eye can see. For example, infrared, ultraviolet, and X-rays. By showing these images, we remind readers that most of the universe and its beauty is hidden for all of our eyes, unless we use special telescopes, says Doris Dow, a NASA astronomer who co-authored the book along with Noreen Grice and Simon Steele. According to Kathleen Lestition, who coordinates education and outreach for the Chandra X-ray Center, the Touch the Invisible Sky project began as just a small mission grant, but NASA is making this book a national resource, distributing copies of the book at no cost to schools of the blind around the United States, to the Library of Congress, to several blind technology and training centers, and to state libraries that have astronomy collections. Science at NASA asked two blind readers to review the book. Until age 15, Tim Hendel could see light and dark, color, shadows, and large objects, such as the sun and moon. He could not read print, but learned to read Braille. Deborah Saylor was born totally blind and also reads Braille. Hendel and Saylor live in Huntsville, Alabama, and have been enthusiastic about space since childhood. Both experienced Touch the Invisible Sky and shared their comments. Tim Hendel. Even though I've lived in Huntsville, which is nicknamed the Rocket City, for 12 years, I had no idea what a space telescope looked like or how a star might be depicted on a map. There's not much information of this kind of thing in Braille, so I was thrilled to read Touch the Invisible Sky. On page 4 is a depiction of all the wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum, from radio to gamma rays. It shows in a way that all humans are partially blind. No one can see gamma rays, yet the cosmos is bright and lively in these invisible wavelengths. I'm a ham radio operator, so I already had a good understanding of the radio part of the spectrum. But it's useful to see the entire spectrum shown on one diagram. I can show this diagram to some of my other blind friends to explain how the whole spectrum comes together and how astronomers use different kinds of telescopes to see everything from radio waves to gamma rays. I knew that our sun emits light and heat, and I had a vague notion that there were other kinds of radiation that our sun and other stars emit. But looking at the diagrams in the book of some of the stars brought home to me just how little of the actual energy sent out by stars can be seen with the eyes or felt on the skin. Deborah Saylor. I moved to Huntsville a few years ago. After all these years of living here in the Rocket City and hearing about the space industry, I'm finally able to appreciate space exploration in the same way everybody else does. So I am, to say the least, very excited about being able to see this book. The thing that impressed me so much about Touch the Invisible Sky was the way the authors put things together so I could see what people with sight are seeing. The diagrams helped me see, but through touch, the explanations of the diagram were very helpful for getting the ideas across. I like this book a lot, and I recommend it to others. It's really something. Touch the Invisible Sky ends with the following analogy. Imagine that you could only hear sound from the middle three keys on a piano, and you were asked to name a song. It wouldn't be easy. Being able to study a star, a nebula, or a galaxy across the entire electromagnetic spectrum, on the other hand, gives us the big picture, providing clues to unravel the greatest mysteries. Sailor, a Van Cleburne finalist who plays entire piano concertos from memory, agrees. The way to seek and learn the most is to develop as many ways of seeing things as possible and keep your sense of curiosity and wonder alive, always. That's exactly what scientists do as they journey through the cosmos, and now the blind can ride along. This story was written by Donna Coulter and read by Tony Phillips. It's presented by Science at NASA. To find more Science at NASA stories on the Internet, please visit science.nasa.gov.
Hi, this is Jamie Pauls with another Access Watch review. The January edition of InfoTech featured an article on conversion programs. Brian Hartgen talked about CDEX, used for ripping CDs to MP3 and other formats on your computer, as well as DVD Audio Extractor, which takes the audio of a DVD and rips that to your computer as well. He mentioned several other programs, including an MP3 tag editor. Even if you don't have access to the magazine, which I would urge you to subscribe to if you're interested, you can still go to www.hartgen.org, that's HARTGEN.ORG, go to the miscellaneous link, and you will find links to these programs on that site. I think you'll find the programs quite useful. Come visit us at www.accesswatch.info and visit our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. Go to www.tandt-consultancy.com to check out InfoTech. Until next time, have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
We need to get Brian Hartgen back. We haven't had him on Main Menu in quite a long time. Let's warmly welcome our panel and guys, we already have a caller, but let's first introduce everybody. Hello, Daryl. How are you?
Hello, good evening. I'm excited to have the panel tonight, and we're ready to go.
Oh,
we
great.
We have Twitter up and running and MSN Windows Live Messenger and all that good stuff.
I saw that. Let's see. So we have, did Randy make it?
Yeah, everybody's here.
Oh, amazing. Randy calling at the last minute. Yeah, typical Randy. Right, Randy?
And Rick, too.
And Rick, too. That's right, the double R's. And we have Don Barrett with us. Hello, Don.
Howdy, folks.
Hey,
how's it going?
It's going great, man. And we have a very special guest here who has, I don't think, been on Main Menu yet. And she had a very nice message put up by her great friend Bruce on his blog telling everybody to come listen to her. So everybody better listen. And so here she is, the great Caroline. Hello, how are you?
Hi, everybody. I'm doing great.
Well, good. Well, let's. We've kept our caller waiting. Now, this caller is a guy that I used to play chess with a lot, and unfortunately, never beat. And so I'm not sure I want to talk to him. No, I'm kidding. Hey, Jim, how's it going?
It's going fine.
Oh, great. Well, how can we help you tonight?
Well, first, I appreciate all the shows you've put on in the past. They're really great and helpful. Let's see, I do have a little suggestion, though.
Sure.
That is sometimes, not this particular panel or anything, but sometimes your experts get into a subject and they plunge right into the details without giving any introduction or what the price of the item is going to be and stuff like that. And
okay.
I'd appreciate some more introduction.
Okay, we'll take that into account.
Okay. The main thing I want to ask about is screen readers. I'm still using IBM Homepage Reader, which is all right. But I'm wondering what your panel has to suggest what I should get for a screen reader. And please don't say, you know, try them all and see what you like. I bet you have some opinions. And,
okay, okay.
Tell me which one is the single one best thing I should do.
Okay, okay. All right, great. We'll let you listen on the air, okay, Jim?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. Well, this is a very interesting question and sort of timely because, of course, ATIA is this week, and a lot of the screen reader companies are going to be demonstrating their newest technologies. And let's just first go around the table and see what everyone is recommending in reference to their screen reader of choice. Let's start with, let's let ladies go first, and let's let Caroline go first. Go ahead, take it away.
Oh, thanks. I get to start. Well, I have both JAWS and WindowEyes on my system, and primarily I am a JAWS user. However, I find that, you know, depending on what you want to do, what applications you want to be able to use, the best of both worlds, you know, the best is to have a copy of both. If you can't, it really just, to me, comes down to what are you going to do, what do you need to be able to do, so on and so forth.
Okay, good. Okay, Randy?
I don't have too much to...
Okay, Randy's breaking up there a little bit. Let's see, Don?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm sorry, Jim, you're not going to really love this answer, but... there is a need to try them all if you can. If you really can't or are not interested in trying them all, the best advice I usually give people, both screen readers are excellent, and they both do a good job on Internet pages. I would tend to get the one that my friends have, because the reality is when you are trying to do something and you want to call up a friend, you know, at 7:30 at night and say, hey, how do I do this? This is what I'm hearing. What should I do next? A lot of people really like getting something that the people around them that they're close to has, so they can call up and really do on-the-fly tech support and get online help or, you know, on-site help at 10 or 11 o'clock in the evening from a good friend. That being said, let me just end by saying, the other night I had to buy something online, and it was some place you absolutely had to click with the mouse, and one screen reader completely skipped over that mouse button, could not find it. The other screen reader, I was able to go right to the mouse button and click on it. On the other hand, I was uploading something to SendSpace, and the screen reader that missed the mouse button was able to track the dynamic uploading of how much time available and how the file size that was left to upload, and the other screen reader didn't do that. So the bottom line is, neither screen reader is perfect. They're both excellent, and I think either one would serve you well, and I think, as I said before, what would tip the balance in my favor would be the one that you can get the best support from friends with.
Okay. All right, Rick, go ahead and take it away.
Okay, well, I guess it really depends on what you want to do. I'm primarily a JAWS user here. I've used pretty much all the screen readers. I own JAWS. I own WindowEyes. I play with System Access and even NVDA a bit. I would say it depends on what you can afford, number one. You know, JAWS definitely is used by the majority of blind users out there, and that's probably what I would recommend. But, you know, if you don't have a big budget and or maybe you don't want to learn all the complexities of JAWS or Window Eyes, you may consider System Access.
Okay, yeah, that's another great option. And actually, we're going to be hearing from Sarah Tech in the next week or two here on Main Menu. They're going to be coming on along with Jerry Chevalier. They have some extremely exciting announcements to be making, so stay tuned for that, everybody. And last but not least, the great Chandro.
All right. Well, I'm primarily a JAWS user as well. I use it on the job, and I also use Window Eyes, System Access, and NVDA, and I've worked with some screen readers on Linux. So really, I love your answer, Don. It really does come down to if you know other blind people, which screen reader do they use, and if they're going to be if you're going to be asking them to help you out with some support, then you may want to consider going that route if it meets your needs. But really, Jim, it really is best to do your research, and I would really say that like anything out there, that anything good requires a little bit of effort and time to get right. And Toonhead writes in and says he thinks the screen reader debate is sort of like the Coke versus Pepsi issue.
Absolutely, absolutely. The only thing that I want to add here is that you really need to take a look at both support organizations of both companies, both
exactly.
Freedom Scientific and GW Micro, and kind of ask people's opinions on support and find out what you think, just not only from support from your friends, but from a standpoint of support from the company itself. Now, I know because, well, I can't get into the details, but I know that that GW Micro is announcing some pretty major updates to Window Eyes at ATIA this week. In fact, it's been announced on the GW Info list that they are adding scripting, and we're going to be covering quite a bit about that here on Main Menu in a few weeks. We can't do that until such time that GW Micro allows us to. But suffice it to say, that's something that you want to keep your ear to the ground on. And there's also some updates coming from Freedom Scientific around CSUN time. Eric was on another website and was mentioning that there's going to be an update. There was already an update for JAWS last week that mainly was having to do with the Magic product in combination with JAWS. And then there's going to be some updates coming out. Believe they're going to call it 9.1, but I'm not too sure. And that's going to be available sometime around CSUN time, is what Eric was saying. So it's important to be listening and watching and keeping an eye on what's going on around these conferences, because this is really where you're going to hear about the latest and greatest technologies, and we're going to try to bring a lot of that to you here on Main Menu as well. So
I'd like to address another point that Jim made, by the way.
Sure.
He asked if we would provide a little bit more introductory material, which we certainly will strive to do that. However, I would like all of our listeners to also make sure that they are on the Main Menu mailing list. By sending an email to main-menu-subscribe@googlegroups.com, and if you have a question that wasn't answered on the show, or you'd like to discuss a topic from the show in greater depth, that's the place to do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, let's see. We have another caller. Let's bring Chris in here, and then I'd like to talk about some announcements from this week. NFB, along with Kurzweil, made a very interesting one, and we'd like to get your opinion on that, guys. So, hello, Chris. How's it going?
Oh, great. Nice. You folks all sound great from there. The question I had was regarding wireless Internet, and my phone contract will be ending in October, although I can get a new phone. And I was thinking of getting something like the Motorola M9Q, and I know there are others that will also do the Internet. I wonder if anybody had experience with that type of phone and what they thought of it.
Okay, we'll let you listen on the air, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right,
you.
Great. Right. Very good question, and I know a lot of us have differing opinions here. Let's let Randy go first, and then we'll kick it over to Don, because I know they have some varying opinions on this one. Take it away, Randy.
Okay, can you hear me okay, Jeff?
I can hear you just fine, sir.
Okay, all right, that's great. All right, I would start out by saying that I have a AT&T Tilt phone that I really like, especially since Mobile Speak Pocket released version 2.0. I now have access to the Wizard, which was something that I needed to do in order to get used to how the touch screen worked. I think the phone has a lot of potential. I think I'm going to be able to use GPS software with the phone so that my GPS and my cell phone will all be in one package. I'm getting better with the internal keyboard, plus I have managed to find a way to get a Bluetooth external keyboard to work with it quite nicely. So I think it's a nice product, and it certainly has a lot of capability for everything from surfing the net to writing emails. So I think it's a solid phone.
The only issue that I have with that phone is it's rather expensive. Isn't it about a $600 phone, Randy?
Oh, no. I got it on a new renewal plan for $299.
You did? Okay. That's with a plan, I suppose. Okay.
Now, does that phone, it has a pull-out keyboard. Is that right, Randy?
Yes, it does.
So from a tactile accessibility perspective, would you consider that a good phone? Or I mean,
when I first used it, I thought the keyboard bumps were a little bit recessed, but I've gotten used to it now, and now I'm to the point now where I can actually, you know, make some good headway with it. I think it's just a function of getting used to how the bumps feel, but I would say that part's okay, and the buttons that you would use in the arrow key that you would use on the front of the phone, all of that is quite accessible. And I've even redefined my camera key since I have no overt use for the camera voice command. So I have all my keys accessible for the screen reader, plus I have a key assigned for voice command. So
nice.
I have no issue.
Now, Gerald, that might be a phone you might want to look at. It's kind of interesting. I haven't seen Tilt, so yeah. Now, Don, you're using something a little different.
Actually, Don is disconnected right now. I'm trying to get him back.
Oh, okay. Now, Caroline, what are you using for a phone? Are you cellular phone capable?
I barely got a talking phone a little bit less than a year ago, and it's just an LG 550 Fusic from Sprint, so I don't have any of the, you know, PDA capabilities or anything like that.
Okay. Now, I have a Singular 3125, which I believe is one of the phones that AT&T is offering with the Mobile Speak plans, if I'm not mistaken, Daryl. And
I believe that is correct, yes.
Now, I have no issues with it, but you and Karen don't like it. And
too flat.
Yeah. You don't like it because the buttons aren't really raised. The phone is kind of the buttons are large, which is kind of nice for my big old fat fingers.
If it was labeled, I'm sure we could put dots on it or put some sort of tactile markings on it. I'm sure that the phone could be modified. But
well, I got my phone for $49, so that kind of gives you an idea of why I did that.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to spend $300. Well, because I bought Mobile Speak before the AT&T deal, and then of course 4 months later they came out with this deal, and so. But that's fine. I don't mind. So. Let's see. Why don't you kick off the discussion on KNFB, and I'm going to get this call.
Certainly. Okay, so Kurzweil and the National Federation of the Blind announced KNFB Reader Mobile this week, and apparently on Monday at Washington Seminar there was a demonstration of the product. And so I'd like to know from you guys, and we'll start with Rick this time. What are your thoughts on the original KNFB reader and now the new KNFB Reader Mobile as far as the practicality and usability of the technology? And be especially interested if any of you have tried it out for yourselves. Take it away, Rick.
Well, it just so happens that I have been able to use the KNFB original reader at my local blind center. I did get to use it at a demonstration and found it to be really interesting. Although I certainly can't afford the cost, I did read about the new cell phone version, and it definitely sounds intriguing, but again, I think the cost is going to be really prohibitive to, most people, but I think the idea is great.
Yeah, that's kind of my issue with it too, is the cost. Not to say that the technology is not not important, and we haven't really had a review of it yet, so I don't want to really say anything about whether it, how it functions. We're going to be having some people on Main Menu to talk specifically about that, though. So, and it's going to be pretty soon, actually. So, stay tuned for that. Be kind of interesting. Now, what do you think, Randy, about this new? Have you heard about this new portable KNFB reader?
Yeah, I just read about it. Probably pretty close to when everybody else did, and I mean, I think it has possibilities, and I think it's going to be. We'll see how many people really warm up to it, and whether once it's gotten into the marketplace a bit, if the price doesn't drop some. I too am sort of pushed away from it just strictly from the point of view of price.
Yeah. Okay. Carolyn, have you seen one of these yet?
I haven't, but the company that I work for, we are going to be a distributor. Well, we are a dealer already for KNFB Reader itself, and we're going to be carrying the Nokia phones, the MobileSpeak software, and then of course the KNFB software for both blind and for learning disabilities. So after ATIA, I'm hoping to have a chance to really sit down and play with it, and really have a chance to see what it can do and how it works, because I will be needing to train customers.
Now you've played with the original, right? Now you've played with the original.
Oh, absolutely.
And what do you think of? It's kind of interesting to get your opinion on this. What do you think of the original KNFB reader?
I think it's got a lot of good. I love the concept of just being able to pull it out wherever and read. I used it actually a couple different times in meetings where I just wanted to, things were handed out and I wanted to know what it was. And it was just nice to be able to have that flexibility that just wasn't there before.
By the way, Bruce says...
I used it...
By the way, Bruce says he tried it and he didn't like it. So, you see, I guess that's true that opposites do attract. Is that right, Caroline?
But Karen and I didn't like it either. We got a demonstration of it last year, and I think we felt that the control surfaces were awfully flat. We understand that it's based on a mainstream PDA, but there's already been such significant modifications made to it anyway. Why not at least put some sort of tactile indicators on some of the control surfaces?
What we did as a company was to take some of those very, very tiny little lock dot type rubber ones, and we put those on the buttons. And we found that, because the market that actually seemed to have the most interest in it for us was seniors, believe it or not. And they were, of course, the ones that would have the most trouble with it,
exactly,
because they're not as flexible or whatever, but we found that once we added those dots, it made it a lot easier for a lot of people to navigate and use the unit.
Well, that's very interesting. I think one of the issues that I had with it, especially when it first came out, was its price. Now it has since been dropped in price significantly, but I mean, if you were to take the parts of that system and buy the PDA by itself and the camera by itself, it really turned out to be a pretty costly purchase when you looked at, what you were actually paying for in reference to the software that actually made the technology work.
Right, and I have some technical concerns which I'm looking forward to the KNFB folks addressing, but I feel skeptical a little bit about the original reader as well as the mobile version. We're talking about optical character recognition here, and yeah, these devices they can do a lot now, but they still have fairly certainly compared to a desktop PC or some of these other devices that have very specialized processors on board, there's certainly would seem to be rather underpowered in the processing area. So I'll be very interested to hear their the way they address that issue and issue of the speed, taking the picture and going through the entire OCR process and presentation.
Yeah, as I understood it, it was actually kind of slow too. The old one. Jesse has called in. Let's bring him on. He had some comments about the mobile phone issue. Jesse is gone. All right, 866-400-5333, 866-400-Jeff, if you would like to call into the show. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about training, because we have lots of people here who do a lot of assistive technology training. And I wanted to kick this off by first congratulating Mr. Knapp, because he achieved something that he's very, very proud of. Randy, you want to talk about that?
Well, you caught me on that one, Jeff.
You're right, I did.
Yeah. I was very fortunate enough, blessed, I guess you might say. I passed the ResNA Assistive Technology Practitioner exam, and so I guess now I can put those letters in front of my name. But I think what will be nice is that it will help the agency I work for attract business and be able to point to a certification. It was a difficult test, particularly for me, because most of it was about technologies that were not specifically blindness based, even though there were a few questions here and there that did.
It looks like Randy has bit the Skype
certification. I'm sort of hoping to be able to work internally to push ResNA to do a little.
Wow.
Gosh. Golly. Tough night here.
Gotta love this.
I think we got the gist of it though, Randy. What you're saying is that ResNA is kind of heavy on other areas of assistive technology, not necessarily blindness related, and it would be good to get some more emphasis on blindness related technologies. But congratulations, Randy. That's significantly great for you, and we really commend you for that. Now,
I'm back. How much of that did you lose?
We kind of got the gist. You were about to describe the the direction that you wanted to try to emphasize, and I think we got the gist of that though. That you.
If someone wanted to take this up, what would they do, Randy? What's the what is the, you might want to describe what is this certification and how does it work and all that good stuff.
Well, it's a certification that requires that you do studying. There's like two or three books that you can read to study. It's really kind of almost like preparing for some kind of a advanced master's degree type situation where you take a board test for that. And so I spent 6 months studying for this thing. And then the test itself was 200 question. It took about 4.5 hours to take. And then, it took me 5 hours and 20 minutes to take. It took the general population 4 hours to take. And then it was just a matter of waiting to see whether I was able to get enough right to pass. And fortunately I did, and I'm real grateful, because I sure don't want to go through that again anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, Howard. How are you?
Okay. My name's Howard, and I have a question on a sort of a different subject, but it's something I've been struggling with for years, and I'd like to see if you guys can have an answer for me. I have a Windows Media Player, and I have Winamp, and I prefer to have Winamp play as many kinds of files as it can. But the problem is, how do I get the two set up so they coexist and so that WinAmp will play most of the files, but when a file comes along that that it can't play, Windows Media Player will take over?
Okay, we'll let you listen on the air, okay?
Okay, thank
All
you
right,
very
great.
Much.
Okay, I'll take our first stab at it, and then we'll see if anybody else has any specific comments on this. Both Windows Media Player and WinAmp will play based on file associations, meaning that you have to associate the player with the type of file that you're wanting to listen to. So the only way that you can really control this is by visiting the Preferences section in WinAmp, and you can hit F for File Types, and then you can go in and look at the list and check the file types that you wish WinAmp to play. And you can do exactly the same thing in Windows Media Player. You go to Tools Options, and then there's a File Types tab, I believe. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's definitely in Tools Options. And you can go in there, and you can do exactly the same thing. And so that's really the only way that you can control the type of content that each player plays. Now, if there's a new file format, you know, like FLAC, for example, which you may or may not have a codec for, then you're going to have to get the codec, and there's ones for WinAmp for that and things like that, and actually get that installed. I think, Rick, do you know if FLAC is supported directly by WinAmp? I think the later versions of WinAmp support it directly, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think so. So, but that's just an example. There may be other file formats that you don't have a codec for, and then you're going to have to download that. Now, Windows Media Player will attempt to download a codec, and sometimes it can and sometimes it can't. But that's really the solution that you have there to that problem. Going back to training, I wanted to give Caroline an opportunity to talk a little bit about that, and then we'll pass it back over to Randy and then over to Rick to talk about exactly what type of training environments they work in and how they find that to be and what kind of in other words, if you were to hire someone to do training with, what kind of things would you want them to have prepared? The person have prepared before you show up.
Sorry, can you repeat that? You were talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about training, and I think one of the key things, you know, a lot of people are looking for an assistive technology trainer, or are looking to be trained in a specific tool, say a screen reader. And I think it really is important to understand what should the expectation be of the for that person, of the trainer, and what things should be that person should be ready to provide to you.
Well, I know that when I go into a client's home, there's a lot of things that we really do request that's taken care of. A big one is a live internet connection, if at all possible, because so much software requires, you know, online registration these days, and some sort of connection is really, really going to be important. And now with Saratech's RIM and RAM packages, you know, remote training is becoming more popular too, and that's going to be, you know, require high speed as well in order to make use of those services. So internet is really a really big one. Being able to type, it's a small thing in, you know, maybe in overall, but when you go in to try and train somebody in the use of adaptive software, when you have to start from this is the letter A, this is the letter B, it makes it really difficult to do what you're supposed to do. Know what you want. Have some goals so that when we come in, we can say to you, you know, what is it that you want to get out of this, so that we can, at least for what I do, we don't have a blanket training, this is what you're going to get. We train to the individual's need. And so we need to know what that need is so that we can make, you know, give you what you want.
Okay, good. Now let's, before we hand it over to Randy, let's ask Rick about this, because now Rick, you've done some podcasting and things like that, and done some tutorials, but you're also doing some on-site training now in your specific center there, right, Rick?
Yes, I was.
Oh, you are? Okay, I didn't know if you were doing that.
I was laid off today.
Oh, wow. What?
Oh.
No, timing, huh? Yeah.
Yes, I was doing assistive technology training.
Now, how did you find that, you know, because you've done a lot of tutorials, you know, where you're sitting behind a microphone and you know, you're kind of, I mean, you could do them in your pajamas. And then you're doing it on site. Did you find that to be quite a different experience for you, Rick? Rick? Uh-oh. Did Rick go away?
Yes.
Oh. Did you?
No, we're here. We're just having a little bit of a hiccup again.
Oh, okay.
We had a big lag there.
Oh, okay. I was saying, did you find the experience from, you know, the massive amount of tutorials that you've done on the internet versus an on-site experience to be quite a bit different?
Oh, yes, totally different. The people that come into the center are generally older, not well-trained in computers at all, you know, needing very, very basic levels of training. Like Caroline was saying, you know, a lot of them need training just to learn how to type and just know, you know, what the different pieces of the computer are. So, yes, it was very, very different. But I also do training online with people via Skype and the telephone, and I get a lot of people where my training, you know, is similar to the tutorials and stuff that I've done.
Okay, good. And Randy? Now you've been doing training for years and years. You go back even to the Arctic days, but your situation is quite a bit different now. And how are you finding that? You've been doing it quite a long time now.
Well, I'm sure Rick and Carolyn would certainly agree with me when I say that the trainings that you do, there's a couple things that impact those trainings. One of which is the person's ability to afford the training, or a fee payer's willingness to provide the number of hours that you need to realistically do the job. And what we find is that... ...is important. And keyboard skills are also very important. Again, we will strongly suggest that a person get keyboard training before they start working with us, simply because we're expensive and keyboard training is not terribly expensive per se. So we try to get them to get that done, and then we'll get into the picture. But what we do is we'll actually sit down with the consumer and say, these are the number of hours that have been authorized for training, whether it's hours they've agreed to pay or hours that have been allocated by their counselor. And you know, then we talk about the expectations of the fee payer, which is either the counselor or the individual's expectations, and then we try to get any additional comments that are in there. And then we'll say to them, we would love to give you everything, the whole benefit of our wisdom that we've gained in the number of years we've used a computer, but that's not realistic. So let's talk about what is realistic, and we will write a training plan that the person has to sign and that they have to read that says very directly what gets covered, how it's going to get covered, and then we actually have a pretest and a post-test assessment we give so that the fee payer gets an accurate record as to what actually happened in the training, not just that I think somebody passed or not, but the assessment result will show how the person did. In this way, we can really establish that the training was effective and met its objective, or that the training wasn't objective because perhaps there wasn't enough hours allocated and a given person may need more time, or there may be other things that enter into the training, such as the medical condition of a person that might have interfered with the training, and in some cases it might even mean that we postpone that training until that medical condition ameliorates itself so that we can pick it up. But what my biggest issue is to making certain that the consumer totally buys into the outcome that we both want for that training, and that they understand their obligation to do the legwork. Because while we can say here's a crease stroke and here's a result, it's the elbow grease that they're going to put into it on the other side, the memorization, the homework, because I always give homework, and I always hold folks accountable for having done that homework. And I'm not afraid to sort of get on them and say, you know, it's your choice. If you don't do this, you're the one that's hurting yourself because of the trainer. I know this stuff, but I'm here to see to it that you know that stuff. So that's kind of where we get. And I think in most cases, I've had real good results with folks just, you know, trying to get them through it. And we really try to go through it as a team. And I would say, I think they did a satisfaction survey, and I'm running at about 97% over 9 years at the site center. So that's really pretty good.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. Now, Daryl, we had a couple of questions that came into the main menu address, and I don't know if you have them in front of you. I do.
You know, I'm not getting them. I don't.
Okay. Okay. I have them.
Stacy
wanted to know about converting a large number of HTML files to text, and she's got a bunch of them, and she wants to be able to do this in an automated way. And she wanted to find out if anybody had any good resources that might be able to accomplish that. Anyone have any ideas?
Hmm. Yeah, won't Jamal?
Yeah, Jamal.
His program do that?
I think TextPal will. I don't know if Ed Sharp
TextPal,
will.
Yeah,
I don't know about
that.
Ed Sharp, but I think TextPal will.
I think TextPal will. Yeah, go ahead and put a link up there for that, Daryl.
Yeah.
And also put one up for Ed Sharp. I think either one of those, TextPal will probably be your better choice there. It's been around a lot longer, and the chances of it having it are probably greater. Then we had one other question, and I'm scrolling here.
We have a MSN question as well.
Okay, let's answer Janelle's next question first. Janelle wants to know about listening to podcasts with iTunes. And she wants to know if there's software available for JAWS to make iTunes more accessible. The only thing that I'm aware of, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong here, is Brian Hargin, and we're hearing from about him again. He has some JAWS scripts that are available at Hargin.org or TNT Consultancy, and these make iTunes as accessible as they can be. So that might be something you you want to take a look at. She's also asking about music production software, and I know a lot of people are using Cakewalk Talking, and it's rather expensive, obviously. But JSonar scripts are also available as well, and I know that that's actually something that Kelly Sapurja uses, who is one of the interactive DJs here on ACB. And Daryl, why don't you ask the question? I'll get this call.
All right. Hey, Bruce actually would like to know about screen reader support on 64-bit operating systems like Windows Vista 64-bit. And what do we know about the latest with respect to the various screen reader makers on that score?
I heard that NVDA was capable of running on a 64-bit platform.
Now, I heard that JAWS 10, Eric had mentioned that JAWS 10, they're going to be looking at adding support for 64-bit operating systems. I heard that the other week. That's something they're looking at doing. And a question was also asked by someone there whether that would be a paid upgrade, meaning if that would be similar to, like, the remote access. And Eric said that he didn't foresee it being something like that, but did not know due to the fact that he wasn't sure of the exact development time, you know, the development timeline on it. So that's kind of the answer that that he gave. As far as WindowEyes, I don't have a good answer on that one. Let's see. Jesse is back. Jesse's cell phone died before. So it's we're almost out of time, but let's bring Jesse in. And Jesse, we got about 3 minutes or so, so let's keep that in mind. And how can we help you tonight, sir?
Yeah, no. First of all, how are you doing, you guys? And
doing great.
Second of all, I have an opinion about the gentleman that was calling about the smartphone issue, that he wanted, he was thinking of maybe getting a Motorola phone. I happen to have gone to an AT&T store yesterday and looked at one. They look really good. They're really nice. I also looked at the Blackjack 2. And as a matter of fact, Jeff, I am talking to you guys on one right now on a Blackjack. The internet, as he was talking about the internet, it is leveraging AT&T's new third generation network, which is basically kind of like DSL on your phone. As a matter of fact, you're going to think this is cool, Jeff. Before I called you just now, I was actually watching YouTube videos on my phone.
Okay.
So I was on YouTube since I got Windows Mobile 6 on my phone. I was watching YouTube, and yes, it does work. Windows Mobile 6 does work on the Blackjack. But I would tell him to look at some phones. You have 30 days to try out your phone with AT&T. So that's what I would do. And by the way, Jeff, I don't hear the other parties in the conversation. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
The other parties, well, they're not talking right now.
No, but even when they were, when I was waiting to talk to you, I could not hear the other end. I could just hear you talking.
Okay, we'll look into that.
Okay, no, but I was just calling just to put my two cents into the comment about what the guy was saying about the smartphone, and I'll send Daryl my information so that in case if he wants to contact me, he can, okay?
Okay, good. All right, thanks, Jesse.
Ready? See you
okay,
later.
Good night, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and close the phone lines for tonight, and I want to thank all of you for calling in. Go ahead, Daryl.
Oh, I would just say said that I think I know for my I think as far as phones and whether you know what you need as far as internet access, I think you have to think about what's really really important. If I were going to do a lot of commuting and they were going to be riding on a lot of public transportation or a lot of buses and commuting 2 or 3 hours a day, I think I'd go. It's kind of pricey, but I think I'd go with one of those air cards in a laptop.
Yeah.
One of those Sprint mobile broadband setups.
Especially if you were commuting a long distance, I think I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
And they work pretty well. I was listening to show over on Ustream TV, actually. They even had video going. And they broadcast all the way from Tucson up to Las Vegas using one of those air cards. So was kind of got touchy in the mountains, but other than that, turned out all right. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming on tonight and joining us here on Main Menu Live, and I want to give you all an opportunity to give contact information if you'd like, or how you might be able to reach you, and any blogs or websites that you want to point people to. Again, let's let ladies go first, and Caroline, take it away.
I'm back.
All right, well, my website doesn't have much to it at the moment, but if you want to check it out, it's www.carolineskittycorner.com. That's CarolinesKittyCorner.com. I'm on MSN Messenger at Caroline, CarolineConGdon, at hotmail.com. Or Skype is CConGdon.
Okay, good. And Caroline, what dealer do you work with?
I work for a company called Adaptive Technology Resources here in Wisconsin, and we deal with Freedom Scientific, Saratech, KNFB Reading Technology. So we handle a lot of different the company that does Zoom Text, all different types of companies that we actually are resellers or dealers for.
Yeah, now Zoom Text just announced their scripting edition. Which is kind of.
I haven't heard anything about that yet.
Yeah, ZoomTechScripting.com is the website, I believe, and that's kind of interesting too. They had a blog up for quite a long time describing their scripting language and things, but a lot of those resources. Now this may have changed when I last looked, but a lot of those resources have kind of moved around on the site. So, But yeah, it's kind of an exciting thing. It'll be kind of interesting to. We're trying to get them on Main Menu too. Okay, let's see. Rick, why don't you take it next?
Okay, well, I'll make it brief. I'll just point everybody to www.blind-geek-zone.net. You can get my email, Skype, MSN, and telephone contact info there, as well as look at the site and get to my blog.
Yeah, and all your tutorials and all that kind of fun stuff. Okay, yeah. And Randy?
I would be glad to pass out an email address. It would be nap.randy@gmail.com. And the other thing I guess I wanted to tell you before the night was over is I'm using a new stereo Bluetooth headset called a Cardo, C-A-R-D-O, S2. And it's really nice. I really like it. It sounds well, and it does well with my phone.
Hey, cool. That's great. Okay. Let's see. And who are we missing? Daryl, of course, but I think we got everybody. Go ahead, Daryl.
Just visit blindaccessjournal.com, everyone.
Okay.
That's basically it.
And did you have any MSN stuff left there, Daryl?
No. We handled Bruce's question, I think we are now all set.
Okay, good. Okay, we'll be back next week with another edition of Main Menu and Main Menu Live, so stay tuned for that. In the coming weeks, we're going to be bringing quite a number of people to you. We're working on a number of guests, including, of course, Jerry Chevalier and Mike Calvo. They'll be joining us on the same show, actually, to talk about some exciting things happening with the Victor Reader Stream and the updates that are coming for all of you Victor Reader Stream users. So stay tuned for that. We're quite excited about that. You want to get a hold of us outside of the show, you can do that by sending an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. And you can call the Main Menu number during the week and leave a message for us, 866-400-5333, 866-400-5333. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.